Bears Rob Payne, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, PowerShell extraordinaire, and IT consultant, helping people move to the Microsoft cloud and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane. It's all about the Microsoft cloud. Welcome to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Mark Keane. This is episode 107. I'm normally joined on the other side of the mic by Robert Crane, who's the Office 365 MVP, but he's not here at the moment. He's on a well-deserved break. He'll be back in a couple of weeks. We both normally run through a whole bunch of news items to kick off the podcast. Rob normally covers the Office 365 side of things, and I normally do the Azure side of things. But as Rob is not here, I'll be doing a little bit of Office 365 and some more Azure news. So we'll kick it off. We'll get right into it. And I guess we'll start with the events that are coming up very, very shortly. We've got the Microsoft Worldwide Partner Conference happening July 10 to 14 in Toronto, Canada. We've got Microsoft Ignite in the US, September 26 to September 30 in Atlanta, Georgia. And across the other side of the ditch, we've got Microsoft Ignite New Zealand, 25th to the 28th of October, Sky City in Auckland. Now, we'll kick off with, I think, arguably the most popular news item that I think has come up in the last couple of weeks, CSP licensing. On June 17, Microsoft appointed five new indirect two-tier partners to the Australian-based Cloud Solution Provider Program, which is CSP for short. These indirect partners are also sometimes referred to as distributors. Indirect means selling through the three levels of the channel. The distributor at the top level does not sell direct to the end customer. The channel order is distributor, reseller, and end customer. There are two types of CSP licensing models. There's direct, one tier. Resellers would have a relationship with Microsoft as well as the end customer. They would have the ability to invest in their own infrastructure, develop the integration with their accounting systems, and provide support and help their services to end customers. And there's the indirect two-tier model, distributors or hosters who provide the relationship to the end reseller on behalf of Microsoft. Some resellers might want to build their own cloud solution business but don't have the time or don't want to invest in infrastructure that it would take to build out the appropriate support or partner billing models. So this is more suited for them. There's new Azure-focused indirect partners. There's Avnet, Distribution Central, SAS Plaza. Now, SAS Plaza, after being appointed as a CSP direct partner in November to sell to end customers, SAS Plaza will also now be able to sell through the partner channel as a CSP indirect partner. In theory, Azure-focused companies could provide any products available on CSP, but these companies have each agreed to a business plan with Microsoft focused on growing Azure. New mainstream indirect partners include Synnex and Dicadata. Originally, there were only two CSP licensing providers in this country. This is Ingram Micro and Ripe, both appointed in April 2015. The new additions I've just announced will add much more competition to the market than before. But just being a CSP licensing provider is not that easy. These providers need to innovate by integrating their own systems with CSP APIs. This would enable the partner to sell Microsoft Commercial Cloud CSP services directly from their own portal in which their customer is already familiar with. Other news, Office 365 turns 5. June 28 this year sees Office 365 have its fifth birthday. Office 365 took over and replaced BPOS 5 years ago. Office 365 now has over 70 million users for Office 365 Business and 22 million users for Office 365 Consumer. Office 365 has beaten its SLA for the past 3 years consecutively. OneDrive for Business seems to be the most popular of Office 365 services, followed by Exchange Online. premium virtual machines backup. June 16 saw the announcement of Azure backup support for Azure Premium VMs, virtual machines. All functions of Azure backup are available, including both backup and restore procedures. However, the restore process allows a choice of choosing to restore the VM to either a standard or premium storage account. Premium VMs use premium SSD storage. As premium storage is still expensive and not yet mainstream, when backup occurs, the premium VMs are backed up to the customer's premium storage account, used as a staging area, before it is then copied onto the backup vault. Microsoft say this is to minimize the impact of IOPS on the production workloads. The staging area is only temporary, and once backed up data is copied through the standard storage-based backup vault in the backend, the premium storage-based staging area is cleaned up. Business continuity and disaster recovery documentation announced June 16 is updated documentation to guide customers around the hot topics of business continuity and disaster recovery. Microsoft is calling the documentation Resiliency Technical Guidance, previously called Business Continuity Technical. This documentation takes you through an array of disaster scenarios and shows you all your options, how to deal with each scenario proactively, and likewise what Azure has available to help protect you from these disasters. When things do go bad, it shows what Azure does in getting you back up and running versus what you are expected to do when things go pear-shaped. Recover from local failures, recovery from an Azure region-wide service disruption, recovery from an on-premise to Azure failure, or recover from data corruption or accidental deletion. Think about geo-redundant storage accounts, for example, which is PaaS, where you have no control over the design of the platform or the underlying infrastructure. If the primary data center in which houses your data goes down, what do you do? This documentation basically says you do nothing. It's Azure that'll make your data available again to you by rerouting the DNS name of your storage account to the secondary data center. Microsoft Azure Information Protection. On June 22, Microsoft announced the new Azure Information Protection, which is basically an upgrade of the existing Azure Rights Management, Azure RMS, by adding the functionality of Secure Islands, which Microsoft acquired late last year. Companies and businesses historically have a logical perimeter that perimeter contained the majority of the business activity and IT services were addressed or accessed internally, rather. This is a comparison to now, where people access IT business services from anywhere. As employees become more and more mobile, IT admins start to punch stacks of holes through corporate firewalls. These days, all user activity is happening outside of the perimeter of the company. Sensitive data leaves companies every single day and normally ends up in the wrong hands. As most of the data is already in the cloud, it's never been easier for people to share this data externally. Imagine if confidential data got leaked. With Microsoft Azure Information Protection, Microsoft is working at the document level, protecting the document in such a way so that their products like Exchange and Office can deal with the documents and do what is necessary to stop leakage. This is all done in five simple protection steps. Number one, classify. To understand what is sensitive and what is not sensitive, personal, not restricted, internal, confidential, or secret, classification can be done manually. Number two, labeling. Label the content so other systems can behave better knowing what the sensitivity of the data is. This part is done automatically. The third step in the protection process is protect. If necessary, it'll protect the data. The fourth step is monitor. Now the data has been classed and labeled, it makes it very easy to monitor it for possible abuse. You get emails for document activity as well as the ability to log into the Azure RMS portal to see if the data is being abused and the locations in the world on a map as to where and what time the document was opened up. The picture of a bird indicates the document is still floating around the internet. And the fifth and final step is to respond. You have the option to revoke access to the document if you see suspicious activity. The bird now disappears and it displays revoked on the portal. Enterprise state roaming. With Windows 10, Azure Active Directory users now have the ability to securely synchronize user and application settings data to the cloud, similar to how roaming profiles used to work. Also, like how iOS devices work, Enterprise state roaming means that people can log on to different Windows 10 devices while taking advantage of the same user experience across the board. Some of the values and benefits of enterprise state roaming include separation of corporate and consumer data, no mixing at all, enhanced security, data is automatically encrypted before leaving the Windows 10 device and stays encrypted at rest in the cloud, and better management and monitoring, provides control and visibility over who syncs settings in your organization and on which devices. A point to note, you need to have premium Azure Active Directory. Settings that are synced with enterprise state roaming include theme, the desktop theme, taskbar settings, etc., Internet Explorer settings, open tabs, favorites, Edge browser settings, again favorites and reading list, passwords, internet passwords, Wi-Fi profiles, etc., language preferences, ease of access, high contrast theme, narrator, magnifier, etc., and other Windows settings, command prompt settings, application list, etc., etc. Azure Media Services now comes to Azure Resource Manager. Announced June 20, Azure Media Services resources can now be created and managed using APIs provided by the AMS resource provider, all through the Azure Resource Manager REST API endpoints. Also announced on June 6 was a welcome addition of Azure Media Services to the new Azure portal, nicknamed the Ibiza portal. This is a welcome change for all companies that are licensed through CSP, as CSP is only Azure Resource Manager, they can now make use of AMS. The only major Azure service that is still on classic ASM only is Azure Remote App. However, Microsoft say Azure Remote App will appear on Azure Resource Manager in the July-September timeframe this year. And that's it for the Azure News this week on episode 107 of the Need to Know podcast. The Azure News can also be read and followed along on my blog site, where it's also published, markkean.com. That's markkean.com. It's time to come across to our guest. And today we're talking to Stephen Hosking of Vigilant IT. Steve, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm pretty good, Mark. Yourself?
Good, thank you. Do you want to just, I guess I've just sort of given you like a slight intro of who you are and your name and where you are. If you want to give the folks a bit more of a background or an intro as to what you do at Vigilant IT, your skill set and brief background.
Yep. So we'll start off with the background where I spent 12 years running end-use compute platforms, primarily focusing on SCCM and OS deployment with application deployment in there as well. In the last 18 months, I've done somewhat of a pivot where I'm now focusing on Microsoft Azure Pack and spending more time doing automation based on PowerShell and C# and developing crazy cool solutions for large enterprises around automation of database provisioning and granting access to how you use those databases.
Okay, so it sounds like you've gone from an IT pro side of things into the DevOps arena.
Very much so. I've very much embraced the DevOps profile of let's fail fast and just develop and figure out how it all works and then continue moving on. So I've taught myself C# over the last 3 years, as well as PowerShell and other .NET languages that have made my life a lot easier for my job.
That's impressive. C#, because normally DevOps people in this world, I can understand PowerShell and automation, but C# is verging more on the developer side of things. So you were one of the smart people who obviously saw the light years ago and thought, well, if I stay in my IT pro job, I'm going to get left behind. I'm going to be doing the job that potentially 10 DevOps people could do. And if I don't skill up soon, then I'm going to be out and a DevOps person's going to come in instead.
Yeah, that's correct. So I've been doing VB for probably 10 years and made the change to C# as a result of SCCM not having certain APIs available in the VB.net world. It was only available in C#. So I made that pivot and I've not regretted it since, as it's a far superior language.
And that's what we're talking about today. That's why we've brought you on, is to talk about SCCM. So I guess for the folks out there listening, SCCM, if you want to just sort of give us a quick overview as to what it is, the history of the product dating back to when it started, just briefly, as it's progressed, where we're at today and so forth.
Yep. So SCCM has its roots back at Windows 3.1 and Windows 95 days, where a product called SMS was developed. So it was called System Management Server, but it got the nickname of Slow Moving Software because of the time it took for applications to be deployed. So what SMS and SCCM primarily are focused on is hardware inventory or inventory of the computer, and allowing the ability to install software, operating systems, and configure features and settings from a central place for multiple computers. So typically you'll see this in large, medium to large enterprises. And at the last recorded or announced numbers, Microsoft claimed that there was 81% of all enterprise computers are running configuration management.
Okay, so by the sounds of it, it's like a server agent deployment model, like all the other system center or some of the other system center products.
That's correct. So SCCM allows you to have an agent on all of your endpoints, be it a server OS or a client OS, and it gives you the ability to interact with that agent from a central location. So as an example, we've just used it internally for to find our wildcard certificates on all of our servers, because it's been implemented in our environment, not completely documented, and we've then used SCCM to find where that certificate is located, so we can then go and ensure that it gets updated correctly.
Excellent. Okay, well, I guess it's one use case for SCCM. If you want to sort of just talk about the current state of where we're at today, so we've talked about the history, SMS, slow-moving software, or system management software, I think it was called. but where we're at today, I think I hear that there's a few changes in SCCM in comparison to all the other System Center products.
Yeah, that's correct. So with Windows 10, or with the advent of Windows 10, Microsoft realized that the existing release cycle of cumulative updates for System Center Configuration Manager wasn't going to cut it, because what the Config Manager team were finding was they'd get asked for features and additions to be added to the platform, and they had no release cycle or release engine to be able to put those features in, as they weren't allowed to add features with the cumulative updates. So in November last year, they released the first version of the current branch of Config Manager. And what that is they've dropped the year naming convention for SCCM. So it's now SCCM current branch, and then if you're needing to have a version, it will be the quarterly release number. So 1511 was the first release in this new cycle, with 1602 following up, and 1606 or 1607 is the expected next release cycle, which will tie in with the new version of Windows that comes out on August 2.
So it sounds like Microsoft are going down the route of Office 365 and, as you said before, Windows 10, where rather than doing the historical box product updates every roughly 3 years, they're going to be like continuously updating the product. So with that in mind, I guess companies at the moment, what would you say would be the most popular feature of SCCM that people are using today?
Well, traditionally and always will be the most popular feature in SCCM is always going to be the application delivery solution, where the flexibility is of the ability to deploy any application to any computer on a set schedule. This continually gets tweaked and improved upon and additional features added. And that's the same with the operating system deployment, which is becoming more and more popular in the enterprise world because it gives you the ability to re-image a computer with your applications and OSs configured as you want. It's more and more they're adding additional features to manage mobile device management and linking it with the Intune platform. It's giving you the ability to manage applications and Office, the Office Suite application access for iPhones and Android devices. And it's becoming far more easier to literally just tick a box and turn on those features. And it becomes a no-brainer to use those products rather than going and paying for a third-party vendor for your mobile device management.
Okay, just when you mentioned app delivery previously as possibly the most popular feature of SCCM, if you want to sort of talk about and describe around the different types of apps you've got, like the packaging of apps, when you come to packaging them, I guess that's another job that you see online is app packages and stuff like that. Like people do that full time for a living. How does SCCM work with packaged apps, or does it need packaged apps, or how does that work?
So SCCM, traditionally SCCM has had the application packaging model where me as an application developer or application packager would create an installation process that would work for SCCM. And from there, we'd go then and deploy it out to a whole environment and it would work in that scenario. With SCCM 2012, Microsoft brought in a new concept called an application. And this actually allows you to have 6 or 7 deployment types available per application. And these can be as simple as I've got an MSI that I need to install that will deploy Skype. But I've also got an executable that will work because it's on a different type of computer. And then on top of that, if in that same deployment application, I can sit there and say, if you log on with your work credentials and you have the company portal installed, I'll give you the iOS version of the application of Skype. Or as on Android, you get the access to the Android version of Skype. So the flexibility is there in the sense that it allows you to be able to trace all those applications and installations in the one location. And from the application packager point of view, it's their delivery engine. It's how they release their software out to the customer.
Okay, so with the application packaging and delivering of the apps, the executables or the MSIs and things like that, how does it manage, or how does it overcome sort of dealing with the different fleet of workstations out in the field? So you've got like workstations which are joined to a work group, and you've got some workstations that are joined to a domain. Now, what are the differences between the two, and how does SCCM handle that?
So how SCCM works around domain joined and workstation or workgroup devices is actually quite simple. So long as the SCCM client's installed, the application will run on the computer. And how it does this is it's using the computer's system account, so it doesn't actually use any of the directory services provided by the domain or the workgroup. So if there is a communication between the SCCM server and the client, it will then go and install any application, any configuration item that you've defined for that computer.
Okay, I remember, I think, going back maybe 3 years ago, I used to do SCCM for a short period of time. I do remember, getting that client or agent onto the endpoint machines was a little bit difficult, in that I think there was some sort of certificate problems that I had. Is that correct, the certificate issues when it comes to putting the agent on the machines?
That's it depends on the configuration of how SCCM's been set up. So if you're using the HTTPS management points and distribution points, then you do require to have a certificate on those endpoints. If you use a HTTP configuration, you don't. And this comes down to the security level of your platform and where you want the complexity. I highly recommend always using certificates between all of your endpoints, because it is important data in the sense that it contains policy information where if it gets interrupted or intercepted during the process, it could cause major issues to your platform. So from the installation of the client onto the computers, adding the certificate is required in certain circumstances, and it's becoming more and more prevalent that that is by default. Everybody uses digital certificates between the client computer and the server. In a domain environment, that certificate's typically deployed out via AD or Active Directory. Mm-hmm. In a workgroup environment, there's a requirement if you're using a certificate platform, you need to have a certificate per computer in the workgroup that is trusted on the SCCM server.
So I guess you've got two types of certificates out there. You've got one that's publicly trusted out in the field by, like, you know, VeriSign or GoDaddy or so forth, and then you've got like an internal root CA. Out of the two, I guess it's a bit challenging, because if you used one of them costs money, the other one's free, and I guess most enterprise would have a root CA internally in the organization, but by default it's not trusted by, say, a Windows machine. So if they've got a large fleet of workgroup joined machines, I guess the challenge is to get that root CA certificate out to those machines. Is there like an easy way of doing that?
So what we've developed internally is a workflow that completes that process, where we sit there and we grab and create the certificates and then create a separate little package that we can run on each of the computers. But in the grand scheme of it, other than doing an automation task like that, because the certificate needs to be unique per computer, it's quite time consuming. And this comes down to if you're wanting to manage your SCCM, if you're wanting to manage your workgroup computers with SCCM, you need to take the time to do that work. It's a one-time pain that, so long as you've set certificate expiry windows far enough in advance that you're not going to have to reissue those certificates every 3 years or 5 years, it becomes less an issue. If you're reissuing the certificate every 12 months, it becomes the administrative overhead on doing something like that is, yes, quite immense if you've got a large number of workgroup computers.
Is it possible to use publicly trusted certificates in this respect for the agent to communicate with the server? Would that make things easier, or is that not possible?
It's not possible, unfortunately, because the certificate is per computer. So you would have to ask for a certificate
for each
computer. And this is because SCCM needs the computer to be able to authenticate, and the authentication that they're using is the certificate.
Okay, I'm going to ask one last technical question here, and I know we're getting a little bit deep here, but I guess the last technical question I get is, I'm going to ask is, could you use like a wildcard certificate on those computers as long as they've got the same fully qualified domain name? Would that work?
No, I've attempted that previously in past organizations, and what ends up happening is you will get approximately 6 or 7 different GUIDs in SCCM, mm-hmm. and then they'll start repeating themselves, and you have computers writing policies over the top of each other.
Yeah, right. Okay, it gets a bit messy. All right. So I guess just one final question in relation to the agents talking to the server. So we've discussed HTTPS with the certificates. Now, the other option was HTTP, and I guess that would be an easier way of doing it. However, it would be less secure with all that information you've got going across the wire. However, if it was internal only, in your opinion, would it be acceptable to use HTTP if the network was secure?
So the answer is, personally, I would be using HTTPS, especially if it's an internal domain. But traditionally, I've used HTTP because it's a lot easier to manage. It all comes down to the environment that you're running it in. Mm-hmm. So if you're running it in an environment that requires a decent level of security, then yes, you should 100% be running it as HTTPS, because it needs to be secure traffic. Mm-hmm. And if you have business critical systems that sit at the end of those client policies, and if you for whatever reason have those policies interrogated and changed on the fly, you could end up with some very broken computers. You need to remember that the SCCM client's running with the computer system account, so it's got full access to your whole computer,
to everything.
So
yeah.
it's a very serious bit of software.
Okay, all right. Security first. Security first is probably the popular theme, is to make sure you sort of dot your I's and cross your T's. All right. Well, I guess we're sort of coming about halfway through. If you want to sort of talk about the new SCCM current branch, they've dropped the year, so it's just called SCCM by itself. If you want to sort of discuss the new features and I guess the venue, features and benefits on that new product that's coming out.
Yep. So what I'll do, Mark, is I'll actually go through a couple of the features that have come through in the last 3 major releases, and highlighting something that's very important coming out in the new technical preview.
Yep.
So probably the big ones for 15.11 was the support of the deployment process and servicing model for Windows 10. And what this allowed you to do as a system administrator is create your own branches. So Microsoft for Windows, they have Windows 10, they have multiple different branches. So you can sit there and go, well, I've got a long-term servicing branch that doesn't get updated often, or I have a current branch which is updated every month or 3 months, depending on the solution. So in SCCM, we have the ability to create our own servicing branches. And that allows me to sit there and go, well, I'm going to accept everything, but I'm going to move the schedule by 3 months. Mm-hmm. And it will automatically do that for me. So then I can just sit there and go, all right, all of my computers in the fleet, they need to be up to this version by this date, and it will continue on. In addition to that, 15.11 was the first version that allowed you to have your whole SCCM hierarchy upgraded via the SCCM console. This is actually a very, very big deal. It allows us to literally go in and go right-click, update environment, and it will go out to Microsoft, download the updates, do a prerequisite check to make sure that everything's going to pass, and then all go and install and upgrade the database for SCCM from previous versions to new versions. And this is how Microsoft's allowing us to have the quarterly to half yearly release cycle. So they're still working out the exact period of how often they're going to release it. Originally it was pitched as every 3 months we'll get a new version, but now I'm hearing it's probably 3 times a year. So it's a moving feast on this one. In addition to that, there was the Windows 10 edition upgrade feature, which is fantastic. What this allows us to do is buy a computer off the shelf and go upgrade to Enterprise, so long as it's running the required versions of Windows 10, being Windows Professional or equivalent. And this then allows us to literally go upgrade to Enterprise, deploy our applications, and we then move on. So we no longer need to re-image a computer when we get it from a factory. It just can go and be plugged onto the network, which for a BYOD scenario or CYOD scenario is fantastic, because I don't then need to go and play around with your computer other than say, here, have an Enterprise license and have my applications. It okay. makes my life a lot easier.
So it's just like so to put that into context, I guess, like if one of your employees went out and bought like a Surface, for example, that had Windows 10 Professional on it, brought into the company, then you would have the agent on that machine, then SCCM would go and update that machine to Enterprise just to like an in-place upgrade, yeah?
Yep, that's correct. So it's much the same as if you were to go and buy an upgraded product key from Windows 10 Home mm-hmm. to Windows 10 Professional. It's a matter of just putting in a product key and it upgrades and uplifts you the access and rights that you require.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's pretty powerful, and it's based around the Wicked technology, which is the Windows image deployment technology. And it's quite robust, and it's used extensively in organizations. Probably one of the biggest call-outs that every SCCM administrator, even every patching administrator in the world, had been asking Microsoft for over a decade was cluster-aware patching. So up until 15.11, if in SCCM, if you deployed updates to a cluster, you had to go and create your own process to be able to make sure that there was a certain level of performance available or certain level of availability of that cluster while you're patching each of the nodes.
So use Hyper-V as an example.
Yep. So Hyper-V, say you've got an 8-node cluster there. If you didn't have a process outside of SCCM to handle that updating cycle, SCCM would just go and install the update on all of those nodes at the same time. Well, could go and install all of those updates on all of those nodes at the same time and take down your whole production cluster in one mouse click. What was released in SCCM 1511 was the ability to have cluster-aware patching collections. And this is where we drop all the computers into a group and go, I need to have a level of 80% or higher or X percent higher availability while this is patching. Otherwise, don't patch.
That's cool. So
yeah,
I guess this comes down to you've got a Hyper-V cluster, and does SCCM live migrate? Is it smart enough to live migrate VMs across
yes.
different hosts? Oh, wow.
So SCCM will just interact with the clustered resources, and this is part of the standard shutdown process of Windows. So it's not native to SCCM, it's native to the operating system. When an operating system in a cluster goes down, it migrates off to the next best available node in the cluster.
That's brilliant. That is literally brilliant. I love that feature, because I used to manage a Hyper-V environment myself, and I used to manually have to run PowerShell commands to free up one host by live migrating virtual machines from one host to another. And this is before RDMA came about. It was time consuming. Yep. It's about like a couple of minutes to live migrate each VM. The fact that SCCM now does that automatically.
Yep.
At the time of patching, you could just essentially set and forget, like 10 o'clock at night, your patching will take place. And meanwhile, you're sleeping, you wake up in the morning and your VMs are like being, or your hosts have been patched and your VMs haven't been touched, they're still running.
And if one of the hosts has an issue while it's patching, it stops patching the rest of them.
So why can't Azure do this? Although, watch this space.
Azure's a bit different in how they do their patching of the hosts, because they don't currently have live migration of the virtual machines.
Okay, so I guess speaking of Azure and the cloud, if you want to, we're sort of coming to the end of it now, but if you want to sort of discuss integration between SCCM current branch, which is the current preview, the technical preview coming out shortly, and Intune. Because Intune is like the, I guess, a brief or overview of how to describe it is more like the cloud version of SCCM. However, there's an on-premise version of SCCM coming out. So how does Intune fit into the mix?
So probably the best way to introduce Intune is Intune started out as a side project of the Windows team during Windows 7 and 8 period. And it was designed as a home use solution that then got traction and got a lot of attention and went, hang on, we can turn this into something bigger. And over the next 4 or 5 years, it became what it is today, where it has the ability to manage mobile devices and manage other devices that are not necessarily Windows. And it's grown very, very rapidly. When it moved into the System Center team 2 or 3 years ago, this allowed better integration between SCCM and Intune. So now that Intune and SCCM are worked on by the same team, they produce both those components or both new features at the same time and try and have on and aim to have them released to each other at the same time, which makes our life a lot easier. What Microsoft's bringing out with SCCM next version of current branch, because it's currently in technical preview in 16.06, is a concept called Cloud Proxy. What this is it takes a beyond what the existing cloud distribution point is and gives you the ability of using Microsoft Azure as your DMZ to manage your internet-based clients. And this is a fantastic solution because it allows all of your clients to go out to the internet and do that communication. You don't need to worry about having a pipe into your data center to allow you to manage your BYOD devices. So your laptops that are sitting at home, that are in your sales offices, all of that can be now managed, or will now eventually be managed, by this new cloud proxy component. And what Microsoft's doing with it, with the Config Manager team, is it's going to be a right-click add cloud proxy, and it's going to go and talk to Azure and provision that virtual machine for you. As an early indicative costing that I've seen, you're looking between about $2 a month for about a 1,500 number of devices hitting that proxy point in the cloud.
That is so it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's becoming very, very important. And probably one more thing on the MDM side with Intune and Config Manager is with 15.11, they actually brought the ability to have the mobile device management process in your data center rather than leaving it in Intune itself.
So the cloud proxy, we're talking about certificates before, so that wipes that whole process out, essentially.
It doesn't, unfortunately. There's still going to be a requirement for you to provide your own KMS and your own certificate authority. But where this becomes very important is it removes some of the complexity of our environment. So we will be moving to this when it becomes a production component for our managed environment. And this will allow us to reduce and our complexity of our platform, because as it stands today, we have 3 servers in the DMZ just to handle 300 to 400 servers.
Gotcha. It's like, okay, so I guess it's if you look at Azure as what it is today, it's like if you relate TMG server, which is no longer supported, the Azure application proxy is like the replacement for TMG. It's like the reverse proxy for websites, and this is pretty much the same thing for SCCM.
It's somewhat, yes. It's becoming a lot better for the DMZ component. So it's a fantastic solution. It's very, very new, and there's going to be a lot of discussions about it. It's created a lot of buzz in the SCCM community. That it's pretty awesome, actually.
All right. Well, look, I think we're coming to the end of it here. If you just want to give us any inside information, anything you're allowed to sort of discuss, do you have any clues as to when the next version of SCCM is coming out?
No, I don't have any idea of when the next version of SCCM coming out. Unfortunately, because it's becoming a cadence of every 3 to 4 months, it's at that point where you're sitting there and going, is it this month or is it next month? Which is not a bad thing. What I would mention is have a look at the Config Manager Ask Me Anything that was posted on Reddit today. Microsoft configuration management team went in there and answered a whole heap of questions around, even down to the console high DPI issues where when you're using high DPI, you don't get all of the buttons and things like that. So there's a huge community around SCCM, and make sure you go out and you have a look at what's out there. There's plenty of Facebook groups, Reddit groups, Twitter, all of those community opportunities that just are fantastic. Like, the SCCM community is probably one of the best in the industry because it's been around for so long.
That was actually going to be my next question, have you got any links or anything other further for people to follow? But you've answered all that. And what we'll do is we'll grab the details from you, Stephen, and we'll put the details in the show notes. As far as that's concerned, thank you for coming on. Thank you for your time. And if people want to get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
If you hunt me down on Facebook or Twitter. So Twitter's probably the best. It's at Steve Hosko. And just flick me a tweet and I'll reply and be all excited because I've had somebody mention me. And I curate one of the Facebook groups for SCCM. So definitely make sure you come along and ping us. And then on top of that, Mark and I will be hosting a user group in a couple of weeks. And
yes, we will
make sure you come along to that, because I'm sure Mark will put that in the notes and so forth.
We will. Definitely. I'll be sure to do that. All right. Stephen, thank you for your time. And with that, that's pretty much the end. And we'll see you next time on the Need to Know podcast. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.